Australian True Crime is an independent podcast. If you help us, we can continue creating and improving our content. That's our promise to you. To support us, simply hit the follow button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. This will help us grow and ensure you're notified as soon as a new episode is released.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to Aboriginal elders emerging. The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
You know, they were very, very dark days. I was dealing ICE at a high profile and, you know, I was dealing to police as well.
Simon Fenwick is a man who does nothing by halves. So even though there was nothing about his childhood or youth that made him a typical candidate for jail, in a way, it's not surprising that soon after trying meth for the first time, he became a massive addict and serious dealer. He's always been an overachiever.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
Even during our latest pandemic lockdown, Simon is still overachieving, in my opinion. His first book has been released. It's a memoir called Breaking Good. And the not-for-profit that is his passion, Fruit to Work, is still functioning, though not in the way that he'd like it to be. And that is really frustrating for him. He does not like being held back.
I haven't even taken the time to go back over my book since it's been published. I've got a brain fog. You know, since this COVID-19 has come in, the whole world has changed. My world has changed. Went from helping a lot of people and seeing growth to everything being stumped and having to let people go. You know, it's terrible.
Yeah, but you're doing stuff though, aren't you? You're delivering food. And when I read that, I thought, God, at least you have an opportunity to be helpful and feel useful to people. Like, I feel like that's a big part of what's missing for a lot of us, is for just feeling so useless.
Yeah, I understand both sides of the fence. Yeah. So part of me feels useless because I'm not doing the enormity that I normally do. But, you know, and a part of me, I feel very lucky to be contributing in many other ways. Yeah.
Yeah. What are you doing now? Tell us about the fruit delivery.
Do you know much about Fruits of Work?
No, no, nothing.
Okay. So Fruits of Work is a non-for-profit social enterprise that provide meaningful employment, a meaningful transitional employment for those who have been touched by the justice system.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody who's employed at Fruits of Work has been touched by the justice system in one way or another. It's been going for 3.5 years, and in that time, not one person has gone back to prison.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you look at the statistics, being 47.5% of people released from prison go back within the first 2 years, we've been 100% successful to this day when no one's gone back to prison.
I don't expect you to know this statistic off the top of your head, but the statistic of people who end up in the prison system who also were in the foster system, who've been in the youth justice system, and most of the kids who end up in youth justice were originally the subjects of family violence orders. The statistics are huge, aren't they?
Probably this is probably the end of the conversation, which I'll hit up first. My true north, something that I've just discovered or discovered a couple of years ago, is I like to make my personal true north is I like to make men better fathers. You know, my personal belief, and that's my personal belief, is a lot of messed up kids come from messed up parents. Or, you know, their idea of a paycheck was their mum or dad waiting for a Centrelink payment or waiting for dad to come home with some hot gear or some drugs, yeah?
Yeah.
So that's the belief of Fruit to Work, is coming home in a high-vis shirt and a pay packet and a box of fruit, yeah? As silly as that sounds, being a contributing member to the community again is a perfect example for these, you know, two or three sets of eyes looking at that one individual who's changed their life.
No, I get that. It's hard to imagine things you've never seen, hey?
100%. You know, and the struggles that we come across with guys and girls that start working with us, you know, some guys and girls that work with us have never had a job. They don't know what it's like to arrive at work on time. They don't know what it's like to move at a timely manner. That, you know, even little things, because they've never had a father in their life or a role model in their life. A lot of our work is driving, so change a tyre. You know, they don't know how to change a tyre. So they're the sort of things that you don't read out of a book that we get to teach guys and girls at Fruits of Work.
But now what are you doing for other people right now in this terrible situation?
Right at this moment in time, the base of our business is delivering fruit and milk to workplaces, offices, factories and infrastructure. Now, infrastructure is still going, so that's still going strong. So we're still delivering to infrastructure, but as you can imagine, there's nobody in the offices. So our business has dropped about 65%. So in this time, we've actually joined forces with numerous other social enterprises. They've all banded together, called themselves Moving Feast. And what they're doing, they're growing vegetables, they're buying vegetables, they're packing vegetables, packing groceries. We're delivering Fruit to Work, are delivering food parcels to people's homes. We had a big lockdown in Melbourne where all the high-rise flats were locked down. We delivered 1,500 food parcels there in 2 days, which we packed and delivered. We also delivered 3,000 meals there every evening, which were cooked by the soup kitchens that we delivered fresh fruit and vegetables to. So we were just doing our bit, you know, for a bunch of guys and girls who've come out of the prison system and all giving back. So it's a great feeling.
You pivoted, mate. That's called pivoting.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds enormous to me. So at the beginning of our conversation, you were lamenting that you're not able to do the enormity of what you normally do, you know. So what is it that you're normally doing? What's this stopped you from doing?
What we normally do is we pull somebody out of the justice system that wants a chance. Yeah, we say second chance, but it's not about a second chance. It could be a third chance or a fourth chance. But we pull somebody out of the justice system who wants a chance at changing their life, leaving that life behind them. And it's like watching a toddler start to walk. So, you know, you see that guy or girl get into the workforce. You see them come home with that paycheck. You see them bring their family together. They get their kids back in their lives. You know, when it's a public holiday, you see them take their family away. I get photos of guys taking their family away on the public holidays, cooking barbecues. Guys at our work at Christmas time are comparing their lay-by receipts, showing each other what they bought for their kids, and they're very excited what they bought for their kids at Christmas time.
Yeah.
Where they've spent the last five Christmases in jail, or any money they've had at Christmas time they've spent on drugs.
Mm.
Yeah. But they're actually excited because they're doing the right thing for once.
Yeah.
And they've got goals, they've got hopes, and they're reaching the goals that they're aiming for.
So where are they now? Why are you unable to do that now? Is it that you don't have the capacity, you don't have the work available now?
No, we're still doing that, but we're not turning over as much as we normally turn over. So when I said that we're transitional, we keep guys roughly for around 6 months. So it could be 3 months, it could be 12 months. Whenever we think that individual's ready and whenever they think they're ready, we try and transition them into full-time employment. With the state the way it is, there hasn't been the work. So
yeah, it's hard to keep that transition, keep things just moving forward.
Moving forward, exactly.
In every way.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, gosh, that's hard, right? So does that mean that you're unable to then bring on new people at the moment?
Yeah, it's almost a catch-22 as well. With the government paying the work for the dole scheme, a lot of people don't want to come to work for 1 or 2 days a week.
Which is fair enough. I can't fault them, to be honest.
Well, yes and no. I really take my hat off to the ones that are applying for work at this time because, you know, if they're getting paid $550 to stay home and they're willing to come to work for 1 or 2 days a week,
yep,
that really stands out to me.
For the same amount of money. Yeah, you're right. But
or less.
Less. I don't know. I can't. Yeah. I can't ask you to take less money, can I? That's hard.
Everyone's very fearful of COVID-19.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I'm very fearful of leaving the house. And so at the moment, yeah, I'd be fearful of going anywhere to work. I'm lucky I can work from home.
So at the moment we've got two guys in particular who are today they're doing 50 deliveries each, delivering to vulnerable people to their front door in the hotspots, you know. Fortunately for us, we wear masks, we wear gloves, we sanitize, and we just knock on the front door and leave. But, you know, they're taking a risk as well, and yet they're willing to come to work, you know. Both those guys are ex-addicts, but hungry for change, you know. Great effort.
We need to talk about your journey, as they would say, if this was a reality TV show.
Yeah.
So tell us about it.
You want me to start from the start?
Let's start from the very start. I mean, we've talked a lot already about the way this happens a lot of the time. We've talked a lot about statistics. So where do you fit in the statistics? How was your childhood?
I had a great childhood. I had great parents. I grew up on a farm. I pretty much grew up an only child because my I had two older brothers who were 13 and 16 years older than me. So I had a really good upbringing, really good family, very close to my dad. When my dad was about 55, he had a massive heart attack. I watched him have a heart attack and we nearly lost him. His work retired him, so they put him out to pasture. So I'd come home from school and I spent a lot of time with my dad. My dad would put a lot of time into me. My dad wasn't a real educated man. He only went to school to grade 3, but he was very knowledgeable. So he put a lot of time into me. As time went on, I started working. I started doing really well. I started training. I started kickboxing as a sport. I started doing very well. My dad was my number one supporter. I think I had about 12 fights for 10 wins and 2 losses. I was a two-time Australian kickboxing champion, a South Pacific champion, and my dad was the number one fan. My dad suffered pancreatic cancer and died and passed away.
Oh, it's the worst, isn't it? It's so fast and it's a shock because did he seem like completely healthy and then all of a sudden you get this terrible news and it's fast and it's wasting and it's just like you can't believe it.
Yeah, and it's suffering. So, you know, I believe growing up on the farm, when it was a dog that would suffer like that, you'd put the dog down. Yeah.
I said this exact same thing a year ago when my father was dying. I couldn't believe it. I was like, how do we let this happen to humans? We wouldn't let it happen to a dog.
On my dad's dying weeks, I grabbed a pillow and put it over his face, and I didn't know what he wanted me to do, because you know he brought me up fairly tough, you know. But as I put the pillow over his face, he grabbed my hand, you know. And to this day, I never knew what he wanted me to do, you know. So it's not, you know. So yeah, so I lost my dad. I was married, two kids, worked two jobs. Always believed in doing the right thing. After I lost my dad, I sort of went off track a little bit. I thought there was more to life. I thought I was missing out on something, you know, if this is what life was about, you know. So I went off the rails a little bit then. I remarried. Yeah.
What do you mean by went off the rails, though? I mean, you know, yeah, okay, I remarried, so that gives us a bit of a hint.
Yeah, well, because I spent most of my life training. So all my teenage years and early 20s, I spent training. I never went to nightclubs. I never did any of that, right? I started doing this kickboxing. I found myself being fairly liked and a little bit popular, and the attention went to my head, you know. I started bouncing, started doing a little bit of security, and, yeah, I liked that lifestyle a bit too much, you know.
Yeah, it's super fun. I get it. It's awesome. So you're out and about at night time. There's heaps of girls and all that. It's fun.
Yeah.
But, like, so were you drinking? Were you taking drugs? What was happening on that side of things?
No, I just enjoyed the lifestyle. Mm. I started working in a strip club.
Great.
I just started delving my foot in that rough lifestyle, yeah? You know, always knew that I had a family at home. Always had my dad in the back of my head, wanted to keep out of trouble, yeah?
What year was this, by the way?
This was 2000.
Okay, in Melbourne?
Yeah, Melbourne.
So we got gangsters around the place and, okay.
Just as all that underbelly stuff started to happen.
Okay, yeah.
Anyway, I remarried. I started working for a leading supermarket chain, had a great job. I was earning the best money I ever made. I was on like 130 grand a year. Driving trucks, best job I ever had, and then I got injured. So I went from being fit as a fiddle to I got struck in the back with a forklift. My two lower discs were crushed and I was in a wheelchair. A new wife, new beautiful wife, big house, Mercedes-Benz, Harley Davidson, and in a wheelchair, you know. I sort of believed that was karma. I really believe that was karma for leaving my wife, really what I thought. But I paid out on myself pretty hard for a long period of time. The doctors gave me all these different medications, every medication you can think of. I was on 12 different medications a day, ranging from muscle relaxants to nerve relaxants, sleeping tablets, painkillers, antidepressants. You know, I was even on Viagra. Nothing worked. You know, here I am with this new wife and nothing worked, you know. It wasn't good. Couldn't even make it upstairs to the bedroom. So I had to sleep in a spare room downstairs. I tried spinal therapy, acupuncture, hydrotherapy, chiropractic, physio, everything I tried, nothing worked. And one day out of the blue, a friend of mine came around, heard that I'd been doing it fairly tough, heard what happened to me. And he came around with a bit of marijuana and he said, "Hey, Simon, I heard this is great for pain. You know, I'd always known that's the sort of stuff he does, you know." He said, "Why don't you try a bit of this, you know?" So I had a couple of drags of this marijuana and thought, "Oh, I don't like this. You know, this slow feeling actually makes me concentrate on my pain even worse, you know. Didn't like it, you know." I said, "Nah, this is not for me, you know." He's like, "Oh, you know, it was worth a try." So he disappears, and a couple of weeks later, he comes back, and he goes, "You still look like, you know, you still don't look well. I got something else I'd like you to try." So what do you got? He goes, "I got some ice. Yeah, like this slow feeling. This stuff works miracles." And You know, I tried speed back in the day when I was younger. And he said, he goes, it's just like speed. He goes, but it's a tad stronger. I said, okay, let's give it a crack. I said, show me how it's done. And that was the beginning of the end for me. But it took that one good proper puff to have me addicted. That one proper puff made all the hairs stand up on all the hairs stand up over my body. That euphoric feeling, you know, my pain was 70% instantly gone. So I went from, you know, barely being able to get off the couch to being able to stand up and walk around a little bit. Yeah. So I thought that was fantastic. You know, I had another little puff after that, and then I was up for 2 days, 2 days straight from that one. You know, it was $100 worth back then. I just thought that was just like an instant cure. Yeah. You know, I thought I'm gonna keep going with this. Yeah. So I end up throwing the doctor's medications in the bin, and I thought, I'm gonna self-medicate on ice daily. And that's what I did. I started using ice daily. I threw the doctor's medications in the bin. The problem was that I started needing more and more every day, and the only way I could afford that was to start dealing. It was either deal or steal. I never made a very good thief, so dealing was the way to go. To deal, I started dealing with some unsavory characters. Whilst dealing, I got shot, I got stabbed. I opened up a little wrecking yard, employed people all on ice. It was a 24-hour operation, you know. Started dealing out of the workshop. I was shot in the thigh. I was stabbed 3 times in the back of the neck with 3 guys trying to rob me for drugs and money. It wasn't too long after that my brother died. My brother started working for me, driving one of my tow trucks. He was using as well, but at the age of 48.
Was he using before, I mean, did you get him onto meth?
No. So my brother was, he used to be an interstate truck driver.
Okay.
He used to use speed back in the day. He had a heart attack in the service station and dropped dead.
Oh, no.
And then 3 months after he passed away, my mother died of dementia. So that darkness is, you know, I just using more and more ice. 12 months after my mother died, I got with a girl, a lady who was friends with benefits, but we had a little girl. And at 6 days old, my daughter passed away.
Oh no!
She looked perfect. She was born perfect. She was a beautiful little girl. But when she was born with the umbilical cord around her neck, and she never had enough brain function to power her own heart and lungs. And that was the final straw for me. When we turned that machine off, actually, when I put her coffin in the ground. It was a little pink coffin that we took off the back seat of the limousine. When I put her coffin in the ground, that was the end of it all for me. That was the darkest of days. I had 5 suicide attempts after that day. How I'm still here, I'll never know. I stood out in front of a truck. A truck hit me. Threw me 16 metres in the air. I put a loaded shotgun in my mouth, you know, and the shotgun went off. Now I'm still here. I don't know.
How much were you sleeping? I mean, I'm thinking about all of this happening through the filter of the sleep deprivation that happens when you're using a lot of ice.
Do you know, I think in 4 years I was lucky to have slept an hour or two a day.
Yeah.
Lucky. Maybe 15 minutes here and there.
It's very hard to cope with all, you know, anything on that much sleep, that little sleep, but to be coping with this level of emotional trauma.
Yeah. You don't sleep. How are you supposed to function?
Yeah.
You know, he's supposed to make half a proper decision, you know.
Mm.
What was I thinking, you know?
Plus the fear level of the industry, I'll call it, yeah. that you were working in, yeah. where people are constantly, you're under threat a lot.
Yeah, and it was under threat from both. So it was under threat from the police, and it was under threat from the criminals. And, you know, I respect the police. I have nothing against the police, but there are a lot of corrupt police too. Yeah, and my book will explain that, yeah.
Yeah, and certainly around that period, early 2000s, I mean, police yeah. were going to prison quite a bit. The drug squad were, yeah.
In my book, there's a particular case of police corruption. You know, I was dealing ICE at a high profile, and, you know, I was dealing to police as well. So, you know, I'm not proud of the things I did, you know, but they were very, very dark days. I got raided numerous times. I bought myself a shotgun after I got shot and stabbed. The police found that. They found drugs because ICE has its own currency. So, you know, you swap anything for ICE. You know, I would swap stolen goods for ICE. You know, so police would come to find stolen goods. You know, after two or three times, I ended up in jail.
For things like that, for receiving stolen goods and trafficking. And so you can cop yeah. a few charges when they come and raid you.
Yeah, and they found a loaded gun. So
right.
Do you blame them? You know, I deserve to go to jail.
Thank you to our patrons, particularly those of you who've been joining us for our true crime Netflix parties on Saturday nights over the last few weeks. No Netflix and chill for us this Saturday night, of course, because we'll be live streaming with Julia Robson from Chasing Charlie and Andrew Rule, and you can grab tickets to join us for that at our Facebook page. Thank you especially to these patrons, Cat Cat Meow, Glenn Roberts, Kaz and Tori Finley Burns, Shani Chi, Mandy Leap Jarvis, Natalie Ivanovska, and Sarah Irves.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Coming up on Australian True Crime, Simon Fenwick tells us about the accommodation the Department of Corrections kindly lined up for him upon his release from prison. But first, we learn more about the seemingly unstoppable chain of events that led him there. Did you have a relationship with your older children at this stage?
I did have a relationship before my back injury. Once I started using, it was really hard to maintain that relationship. You know, the drugs came first. Today I'm disgusted and embarrassed and ashamed to say that, but it's the truth. The drugs came first. I was always, I'd arrange to see him, but I'd have to wait for somebody to come and drop gear off, truck come and drop cash off or come and pick up gear. Yeah, and that, there's no set time for a drug dealer. Like, you know, if someone's going to deliver you drugs and say they're going to be there at 2 o'clock, you can bet your bottom dollar that 2 o'clock is 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just how it is.
Of course. Yeah. So you've started to rack up a few charges at least and convictions, I guess. Yeah. I guess that would snowball pretty quickly too, wouldn't it? You'd go from having no convictions to suddenly heaps.
Yeah. And then just stupid things like driving unlicensed,
yes.
Driving unregistered cars, you know. And the deeper, once you break the law once, it just keeps happening, just small things, but you just keep getting into trouble. You know, which tally out.
And the other thing someone said to me once was, when you're a drug addict, you don't understand that it's the drugs that are creating the chaos. Like you think to yourself, why is all of this happening? But it takes you such a long time to realise it's because I'm using drugs. It's the drugs that are creating. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, 100%. And even just little things with the people that you associate with.
Mm.
Who you think that they're your friends, you know, they're just as messed up, if not more messed up than you are.
Yeah. And they bring chaos.
They bring chaos. And I look at how messed up my life was, and I actually remember that whole time how much I actually really tried to help people. So even in my factory was almost like a bed and breakfast where anyone who had nowhere to sleep, yeah, well, could come and stay at my factory. They would steal things off me, you know. I'd give them a feed. I spent my time trying to help the wrong people.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, they don't want to rip you off. They like you. They genuinely like you and they appreciate it. But
they're desperate.
They need money. They're desperate.
The addiction, the addiction's so strong, you know.
Do you remember going to jail for the first time? Did you detox in jail? I know that drugs are easy to come by and that, but I always imagine, like when you're in the MAP, for example, in the assessment prison, is it easy to get hold of your drugs in there or are you detoxing in there?
Yeah, if I can honestly tell you, the worst prison I went to was the sub, which is the custody centre underneath the magistrate's court.
Yeah.
So that's where they lock you while you're waiting for bail. It's no daylight. You're locked there for up to 2 weeks. You're in a cell with up to six people, one toilet. You eat, you sleep, and you're all in that one room. It stinks. Everyone's either coming down off drugs or alcohol. It is putrid.
In one toilet when everyone's coming down and detoxing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. No mattresses. You get three cushions of a sofa. Three you get to sleep on. No pillows. You get one blanket. You wait till the next guy moves on to see if you can pinch his blanket. You know, it's the food comes from another prison, so it's just absolutely putrid. And if that's not an awakening for you to want to stay out of prison, you know, I didn't have many sentences in prison. You know, I went there, I got bail a couple of times, and then I ended up in jail, and that was enough for me. My first time in the MAP actually wasn't too bad compared to remand. Remand was terrible. I went to the Melbourne Remand Centre just after they had the riots, and it was a 22-hour lockdown. So after coming off an eight-year drug habit, losing your mother, father, brother and daughter, and masking all those years of grief with drugs, being a smoker and not being able to smoke, it was a big wake-up call. And having 22 hours of your own time to yourself, I fought my demons in that prison cell. Yeah?
Yes. You're reminding me now of a young man we spoke to called Greg who also had an ice addiction and he had lost his sister. And he talked about that. He talked about this moment of confronting the grief that he had never, ever confronted, and he confronted it in jail. Yeah. So, yes, yeah. Tell us about that moment of having to face up to all of that grief.
It really just hit me all at once. You know, I had, like, when my mum had dementia, we put her into a retirement village or a home for a short period of time. And I used to still drive past that home after she passed away, being a user, still thinking that she was still in there, right? So didn't accept. So that's the key word, accept. I never accepted the fact that my family, nearly every one of my family members had died. So when my mind started to regenerate these chemicals and started to clear, having to accept the fact that I had lost my mother and father and my brother and my daughter was very hard. So I knew I needed help there and then. I knew I was lost there and then, and I knew that my way wasn't working. So that's when I persisted. Every day I would go knock on the Screw's desk and say, listen, can I get into a course? Are there any courses today? You know, is there anything I can get into that can help me? And if you've got a good Screw, the Screw would have a look and see if there were any cancellations, because a lot of these courses have a 7-month waiting list. Yeah, so if you've got a good Screw, he'd have a look. If you've got a bad Screw, he'd tell you where to go. Yeah, but if you've got a good Screw, he'd have a look, and all he had to do was pick up the phone and say, look, would Simon come down to this course today? In my time in remand, I did about 11 or 12 courses, only short courses, 2-day courses, you know, 4-hour courses, but they were tools for me to cope with what I had gone through, tool for me to use to help my head understand what I had been through.
Did that stick for you, that from that beginning of facing your trauma and your emotions and your grief, did it really stick from that day forward?
That and the fact of going from living in owning a 50-square home with 5 bedrooms and an ensuite in every bedroom to being in a stinky, dirty jail cell, you know, with a 2-inch mattress. You know, there's nothing nice about being in jail, you know, and I think the worst part about being in jail is listening to other people in jail. Listen to the rubbish that they can talk, you know, talk about the crimes that they've committed and the crimes that they're still going to commit.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not all like that, not by any means, but there are a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of blokes do just think, oh, well, when I get out of here, I'll just be better at what I was doing. That I just made a few mistakes. That's how I got in here,
yeah.
But I won't make them again. I'll get out. I'll sell more drugs. That's how I'll get my big house back.
Yeah.
I'll just sell drugs better. And I'll get a nice house going. And a lot of people think that way.
A lot of them don't know any better. A lot of them think they do a rort from, you know, from rort to rort is how they make their money. You know, and a lot of them are in that world of hopelessness that, you know, they get out of jail and they can't get a job. You know, I was almost that desperate. You know, when I was released from prison, I was going to the Uniting Church for food parcels because I was hungry. You know, the dole I was released on Centrelink benefits. I still had a corrections order to fulfill. So I had an 18-month corrections order where I had to do 380 hours community work, a mental health program, a drug and alcohol program, a men's behaviour change program. I had judicial monitoring. I had to see my caseworker, and as well as try and get a job. And you know, my rent was costing me $200 a week and I was living off $60 a week. How are you going to survive?
Yeah, and try and reestablish a relationship with your kids as well, where you want to be able to take them to Hungry Jack's or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I asked my daughter when I got out of jail, where do you want to go? And she said, the pancake parlour. You know, so...
It's expensive, man.
No, I took her to pancake parlour, but that was my whole fortnight's allowance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think it was the difference for you also was that you had that modelling that we were talking about earlier, like you had seen and you'd lived in a family where people went to work, had jobs and all that, so you knew how to do that again?
100%. I think I was blessed in the fact that, you know, for starters, I had been there once before. I had owned the homes. I had the jobs. I had that family life. So I knew what to aim for when I got out. you know, where a lot of guys and girls haven't had that.
And actually that one worked for you, didn't it? And the, yeah. and the meth life didn't. Yeah, so no. you could see clearly which one yeah. worked. Yeah.
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 100%. So what happened was I got out of jail, desperate for a job, applied, I think, for 12 or 14 jobs. Every job I applied for, you know, when you tell them that you can only do 2 days a week or that you just came out of jail or that you had a back injury, you know, doors closed.
Those are a few things, yeah.
Yeah. When I went and saw my caseworker, told her how desperate I was, told her that, hey, I'm that desperate, I'm hungry. I went to go get a food parcel this week and they said, no, you can't have one because you got one last week. You're only allowed one once a fortnight, right?
Yeah.
I'm that desperate, I'm going to go back to dealing, right? But I don't want to die. Yeah, I just got my head right. I got my goals in place. I don't want to die. Yeah, and I don't want to go back to jail. So can you help me? And it just so happens that Fruit to Work put a flyer through to say, hey, we've got one job available. Yeah, one job available for someone who wants to deliver fruit starting at 1:30 in the morning, 2 days a week. Yeah, I applied for the job. I got it. You know, I worked my way up from picking and packing fruit to today. I'm the operations manager of the business, and you know, I do everything from business development to mentoring. Today, I consider myself a very lucky man.
How many years? How many years ago was that?
3.5 years.
No, is that all?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say 13,
no,
20.
No, you know, I climbed the pyramid in a very short time. And it wasn't easy. You know, one of the biggest challenges I came across was I had nowhere to live when I got out of prison. I've only got one living relative left, and that was my brother. And he's a justice of the peace, right? So he made it very clear that he would help me in any way that he could, but I wasn't to live with him, right? That's fine. So he picked me up from jail, and that was in Sale. He took me to the boarding house that the prison had organised for me. When we got to this boarding house in Melbourne's West, we knocked on the door. This lady opened the door, and she was off her face on heroin. She was smashed, right? And she's pointing me down to the hallway. She's slurring her words. She's saying, you must be here for the room. And she was a really big lady. One eye open, one eye was looking one way, another eye looking another way, right? And I said, yeah, I'm here for the room. And she's unlocking these three padlocks on the door. And she's saying, listen, you've got to lock your door every time you go to the toilet because everything goes missing in this house. And she said that your room smells like urine. Because the bloke in the room next door urinates on the wall and it goes into your room.
Oh.
And she opens up her door, opens up his door, and the smell of urine knocked me for a six.
Oh.
I just got out of jail and the toilets in jail smelled cleaner than that bedroom. You know, the accommodation was a mattress and base. The mattress was blood-filled. It had a big, dirty brown blood patch right in the middle of it. And there were syringes on the carpet.
Oh.
And that was where I was supposed to start my new life. You know.
Did he leave you there?
No.
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 No. No.
No. He didn't. He didn't let me go live with him, but he actually put up money because they took the money out of my Centrelink for that as well. So they took 1 month in advance out of my Centrelink. But he lent me the money and put me into a better boarding house.
Bless him.
Nice, clean, drug-free boarding house. If I never had that one person in the world, that one man who never gave up hope, I probably wouldn't be here today. That one man, and that's probably one of the most powerful messages in the book, you know, for all these people that have family that are addicted to ice, don't think that you have to spend money on that person to help him.
Or it doesn't have to be all or nothing, you know, like I respect his boundary at saying, I can't have you live with me because he wasn't to know that you were going to make it. And, you know, we have to respect that that was going to be a big risk for him and his family and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, but he still wasn't going to leave you in that place.
No.
And he still came to pick you up, you know. That's good boundaries, I think.
Yeah, he's a very level-headed man. You know, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here today.
Good on him. Do you see a lot of that when you're working with people? Are there a lot of people who don't have that one person in their lives?
Many, 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 plenty. So what I've tried to be a part of is last year, for the first time ever, there's been a, I think, the put together, which is peer mentoring for prisoners, where prisoners can go back behind the walls and mentor other prisoners. So for the first time ever, they're letting ex-prisoners go back behind the walls and mentor prisoners. And it's had a great response. Whether they run it in all prisons or not, I'm not too sure. But there's a lot of people that just need a bit of guidance. You know, they just need a bit of advice or someone that can relate to them to say, hey, this is how you can get through this. This is what I would do. Everyone needs that somebody, yeah? And everybody needs a job, and everybody needs a roof over their head. That's the biggest gap, yeah, is employment and housing.
And a decent roof too, a decent roof, you know?
Yeah, a decent roof. How do you expect to turn up for a job if you're sleeping in the street?
Or if you're sleeping on a bloodstained mattress that stinks of piss. How do we expect anybody to respect themselves and respect the world around them and give the world a go if they live in there?
But fancy the jail sending you there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, fancy the jail even sending you there. Here you are, you know, probably still withdrawing from drugs or trying to avoid the temptation.
Yes.
And you know, you can't tell me that I know what happens in those houses. They do.
If ever I wanted to self-medicate and try to avoid life and try to deal with my depression, it would be in that room, and old mate out the front can hook me up.
Yeah, exactly.
Ridiculous.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know?
You're not exactly set up to succeed, are you?
And you are very right about the amount of drugs in jail, because there are plenty of drugs in jail.
Mm.
You know, plenty of illegal and plenty of legal. You know, the amount of scripted drugs in jail, the queue for the med line used to be a mile long. But, you know, they would queue up for their whole break in an hour for just to get their meds every day.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it's not a wellness retreat, is it?
No, not at all. Definitely not.
I know what our listeners will say. They'll send me messages and go, I want to support Simon. How can I do that?
Buy the book. Breaking Good.
Definitely buy the book. And how can they support the program? How can they support what you do?
If they've got a business, we deliver fruit and milk to any sort of business, just in Melbourne. Yeah, so every dollar we make goes back into making employment or giving someone else a chance. Yeah, nobody gets rich at the top. So we're not asking for anything for free. It's a service.
Yeah, and we'll share all the links and everything as well. And we'd definitely like to keep in touch with you. And when this COVID is over, which everyone, we all keep saying, when this is all over. But, yeah, we'll definitely catch up with you again and keep up with what you're doing. And the other thing is I always say to people out there who have an opportunity to employ people that maybe they could consider people who have been in jail before. Like, but would you have advice, you're an employer, would you have advice for employers when it comes to interviewing people and someone says, okay, look, I've been to jail. How do you talk to them about that? How do you suss out when they are ready for employment? How do you support them? How do you support someone who's just come out of jail and is now in your business?
Do you know, even at Fruit to Work, even though we know someone's come out of jail, do you know we still do a crim check?
Okay.
So, and before we do a crim check, I'll ask whoever we're about to employ what they've done. So because we base our employment or we base our program on honesty and integrity.
You're right.
So you know, when employing someone, I would advise everybody to do the same. Base their employment on honesty and integrity. Just because they've got a criminal record, it doesn't mean they're still a criminal. It doesn't, you know, everybody makes mistakes. Does that mistake have to last for life? No. You know, I ask them, do you have a criminal record? What was it about? What happened? Do the crim check. If it matches up, all well and good. You know, why does that person have to be labelled for life? No.
So even though you know they have just come out of jail, you do the crim check and you just want to see that it matches up, that they're being completely honest with you. And if they are, that's a positive start.
Exactly. That's exactly.
Okay.
If I'm going to give somebody a keys to a van and a fuel card and a Coles card, you know, and a key to the factory. We've got to start with some honesty straight up and no bullshit policy. This is where we're going to be.
Yep. Yeah. That's a really good pragmatic piece of advice. We can use that. That's unreal. Thank you, Simon.
Yeah.
One more question. How are your kids now? What are they up to? I mean, how's the relationship?
Okay. So my oldest son, who's 20, he's still been a little bit of hard work. It's taken me 3.5 years and I'm making baby steps to a relationship. You know, there's just been too many times that I'd let him down in the past. My daughter, I see her all the time. She's 16 years old.
Pancake parlor.
Pancake parlor girl, yeah. Yep. We get along like a house on fire.
Yep.
She's a beautiful girl. And I've got a six-year-old boy who lives in Mildura and he comes down every holidays and he's a beautiful boy. But I've also got a new partner. We've been together for 2.5 years and she's got three daughters, 10-year-old girl and a couple of daughters in their 20s. So I've got I now have an accepting family. Yeah, I've got a family who know who I am and what I've done, but I've got a family. Once my family died, I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere. Yeah, I belong somewhere now.
Yeah, you're clearly a family guy, so I can understand how feeling you had no family must have made you feel like you were just adrift.
I felt nowhere. Yeah, didn't feel like I belonged, you know. Because I was on drugs, I felt I was ashamed of what I had left. Yeah, so, you know, I was ashamed. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassment to my brother, I felt. And I was ashamed of myself to my kids. So, you know, I felt like my kids could do better. Luckily, my kids got a great mum. You know, she's a great woman. And they got a great stepdad. So, you know, again, I've been very fortunate too. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're setting yourself up to be a fantastic granddad. That's my feeling.
Yeah, that's the go. That's the go.
Yeah, wonderful. Oh, well done. Congratulations.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you to Simon Fenwick, whose book Breaking Good is out now. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime, made in association with the Acast Creator Network. And thank you to the following patrons: Zaylee Dempster, Jesse Sternquist, Libby, Emma Saville, Jordan Mildred, Kelly Gibson, and Sarah Liedke. Because of them, we'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.